This Saturday, the WCF Symphony will be presenting their Hungarian Project concert. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom for the Iowa Arts Showcase, and today we're fortunate to have the WCF Symphony's artistic director and conductor, Jason Weinberger, with us. So thanks for joining us, Jason.
Well, thank you for having me, Jacqueline. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us about this Hungarian Project. You're going to be showcasing the music of Bartók, Brahms, and Kodály.
I've always been thinking about doing a project like this. Half of my family is from Hungary. So even though they all left there during the Second World War, I kind of had been looking for a point in my life to be able to explore a little bit more of the cultural side of that familial connection. And so the last couple of years I've been doing that, had a chance to work with a wonderful group of musicians in Budapest. And so that took me back over there a couple times. And this concert is the direct result of that time spent there and conversations with Hungarian musicians and thoughts about some pieces that would make for a really wonderful representation of Hungarian music as it filters through, you know, some very different personalities in terms of the composers and their methods being quite different too. So we get this really interesting kaleidoscope of Hungarian style music in this concert as it's handled by these different composers.
Well, tell us about your opening work.
So we're going to open the concert with the Brahms Hungarian Dances, 1, 3, and 10. Those are the only three that were orchestrated by Brahms, and I mention that because these pieces did not begin life as orchestral pieces. In fact, you really have to know something about where these Hungarian dances started to understand what they're all about. They began as four-hand piano music. So this is music that was quite commonly actually played during the 19th century on one piano by two musicians, four hands. And this was a very common form of entertainment, particularly for the burgeoning middle class in Northern Europe in the latter half of the 19th century. And so on one hand, this is an incredible social phenomenon in terms of entertainment and how people were consuming music. But what also happened with a lot of this music was that while there certainly were arrangements, particularly later, of symphonic works for four hands piano, many of the composers who wrote in this form took a little bit of a different approach when they wrote music, maybe not quite as formal as concert hall music, something they thought would be more enjoyable for amateur musicians to play, because of course, you know, most of these people were not professional orchestra musicians or anything, as folks enjoying music at home in the salon. And Brahms actually, when he was a young man, played quite a bit of four-hand piano music. Then there's this interesting crossover with Brahms into the world of Hungarian music. Partly came about because he had an acquaintance and actually a working relationship with this Hungarian violinist who introduced him to apparently a good amount of traditional Hungarian music. And so you have this sort of interesting meeting point in Brahms's life of the four-hand piano repertoire, this sort of entertaining, lighter, shorter pieces for people to enjoy at home, and his interest in this Hungarian style that he picked up also at a young age from this violinist he worked with. And finally, of course, during the 19th century, Vienna was the seat of classical music, and that's where Brahms lived ultimately for much of his adult life. But that was the seat of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And so it really was one of the great polyglot entities in Europe or all throughout the world at that time. And so Vienna had a very cosmopolitan nature, and there were all kinds of different musical influences that affected the composers who lived there. You know, we think of Mozart and the Turkish craze during his lifetime. So there's this really unique circumstance that brings Brahms to these Hungarian dances, so to speak. And after he wrote them, first for piano, and then later he arranged them for a single pianist, and then later started arranging them for orchestra, they became some of his most successful works from a financial point of view, printed and reprinted and sold many times over, and really helped secure his financial security. And so all kinds of interesting things related to what seems like a very light series of pieces. We're going to do the three that Brahms orchestrated, and those will start our program. And it's kind of like the perfect way to get in the mood, I guess you could say. Not a Hungarian composer, but such an interesting story about how all these threads came together in Brahms' hands, who ends up ultimately writing some of the most famous Hungarian pieces we know.
So what's next on the program?
So after the Hungarian Dances by Brahms, we really change gears and we hear the Bartók Divertimento. And this is a work for strings that is really a blend of different things going on in music and in Bartók's life. The piece was written in 1939. It's the last piece that Bartók wrote before he left Europe and emigrated to the United States. kind of had been seeing the writing on the wall, and he talks about it quite a bit in his writings, and eventually started moving his valuables out of Hungary, and he ultimately canceled his German publishing contract, and he moved to the United States, where he died a few years later. But what's interesting about this work, it's written during this very difficult, very dark time. But Bartók's writing the piece itself, just kind of completely separated from society. He had been commissioned by a guy named Paul Zacher, who's a Swiss patron of the arts, who had commissioned, I think, over 100 major works during that stretch of time, that first half of the 20th century. And he set Bartók up in Switzerland in a little cabin with a chef and a piano, and just said, I want you to write this piece. And in 15 days, in this amazing setting, Bartók wrote this incredible divertimento. And the work is interesting in that it is kind of a Bartók's stab, in a way, at the neoclassical approach. So Stravinsky had done this, and a number of others, really drawing strongly on, you know, Baroque and classical models. And that's exactly what he does in this divertimento, even down to the title, which is a very common name for a lighter piece that we would have been heard at a party or something during the classical period.
And he basically was told by Zacher to write it for like string orchestra.
Yeah, he's very specific about this exact string orchestra that he wants. Zacher commissioned some of these works specifically, I think, for the Basel Chamber Orchestra. And so I have a feeling that some of these pieces were really geared towards that specific group. But actually, Bartók specifies exactly how many minimum numbers you can have, because there's divided sections within each part. There's also quite a bit of solo playing, so that the piece resembles, in a way, kind of a concerto grosso from the Baroque period, where you have a group of soloists play, and then they're sort of in conversation with the whole group. And that's another mark of this sort of neoclassical element of the work. By the same token, harmonically, it's very interesting. It draws quite a bit on some of the modal harmonies that Bartók explored in a lot of his works, and a lot of which came from Hungarian folk music. And in the second movement in particular, which is really the darkest section of the piece, he really starts to push tonality to its edges and gets a little more aggressive with the way the harmony is handled. And so the piece has quite a range within it, from very tonal and kind of bright, lively dance music to some very dark, slow music in the middle movement. And then this wonderful rondo-like finale it's rollicking all the way to the end. It's quite a piece. It's singular work for strings, probably one of the great string pieces of the 20th century. It's just hard to believe he just tossed this thing off in 2 weeks. And we are giving a little sneak peek of the 2018-2019 season, and actually we're going to be launching that season on Saturday at this concert, so we're not going to divulge that piece until we're on stage.
So tell us about the last work on the program.
We return to Hungary when we come around to the Dances of Galanta by Zoltán Kodály, another Hungarian composer. And this is really a neat piece. It's a piece I've known forever because it has a wonderful clarinet part. And so when I was starting clarinet way back in the old days, 8th and 9th grade, you know, my teacher said, oh, this is one of the pieces you have to listen to. And I would try and imitate the clarinet players I heard on the recordings and always wanted to play it. And actually, I never got a crack at it as a clarinetist. So this is, for me, fun to come around and conduct it. And this piece is based on a Hungarian style of music called verbunkos, which makes an appearance in much of the music of Hungary. I mean, Bartók is written in this style a number of times in other pieces. Kodály does it here, and there's a whole tradition going back to the 1700s of this type of music. It's basically a kind of odd hybrid of militaristic music and folk music. What happened basically was that the army recruiters for the Habsburg army would go around trying to, you know, round up young men from the villages and get them into the army. And so the way they did this was they hired gypsy musicians and dancers, and they toted them around, and they put on a little party with music. And this was supposed to recruit people to join the army, I guess, get them roused up and maybe get them drunk too, I guess. And so this music typically would have like kind of a slow attention-getting section at the beginning, followed by very lively, fast dancing in the second half. So that's the hallmark of this verbunko style of music, and that's the format of Dances of Galanta. But in addition to kind of drawing on this, you know, by the time Kodály wrote this piece, that tradition was 150, maybe even 200 years old. He also draws very heavily on his own childhood experience, because Galanta is, in fact, the town where Kodály grew up. And so he talks quite a bit about a band that played in the town he remembers very well. He talks about the singing of his classmates. He remembers a lot of these songs. He actually says that he composed the piece using a notebook of Hungarian melodies that had been published in Vienna. That seems to be the touchstone. But when you hear the piece and you think about Kodály, you have to assume that he sort of used the book, the printed music, probably like as a touchstone, you know, for ideas, but that the more authentic feeling of the music must have been in his ears from growing up with it, hearing it as a kid and being around it. So this piece ultimately was written a little bit later on in his life, in the 30s, not too much earlier than the Bartók Divertimento, and it was written for the 80th anniversary of the Budapest Philharmonic. So it had a big occasion to it. And in that sense, I guess you could say that he was really trying to create something that would be an object of national pride, you know, something that really demonstrated the very best in Hungarian music. Man, it's a wonderful piece. This has a slow, very beguiling opening with the clarinet featured in this incredible cadenza. And then these wonderfully rhythmic dances that follow are just so much fun to play. And I think our audience is going to love hearing them.
Tell us, how can folks get more information and details, tickets, the whole nine yards?
Sure. WCFSymphony.org, or just find WCF Symphony out on the social media channels and you get a little more information about the program and timing. We're going to have a bit of a chat before where I'll speak about my experiences in Budapest working with some Hungarian musicians and maybe talk a little bit about my family history. That'll be happening 1 hour before the concert. We're going to do that out in the lobby, and that's open to anybody who's coming to the concert. And then we begin at 7:30. If you'd like to call for tickets, you can give us a call at 319-273-SHOW, which is the box office, or you can also visit in person. So if you're on campus at the University of Northern Iowa, just drop into one of the ticket offices and you can get tickets there. This is going to be a wonderful, wonderful concert. It's just the way it highlights the orchestra and the way it highlights this style of music. We're really excited to present it.
Thanks for today's interview. Goes to IPR's Chris Fenton and WCF Symphony's Artistic Director and WCF Symphony's Conductor, Jason Weinberger. And thank you so much for coming in today, Jason.
Thank you, Jacqueline.